You are listening to a sermon by Chan Yang, recorded on Sunday, January 28, 2024, at Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
If I speak too fast, give me a signal. If I speak too quietly, give me a signal. I'll try to look up. Language is a powerful tool. It allows me to talk to you guys in concepts that aren't real to most creatures on this earth. No matter how much I practice this sermon with my dogs or cats, they'll never understand it, or the birds outside. In fact, finding relevance and meaning in these words is a very peculiar thing if you really think about it. And I found this, the crux of this message, this meditation came from raising a two-year-old daughter as she absorbs two different languages like a sponge. One, and I'm constantly amazed that she repeats and reiterates words that I said that I didn't know that I said. But we don't often stop and think about the wonders of language. It's amazing how I can read a Bible written thousands of years ago in a language of my choosing while still retaining most of its meaning. And people will argue that. Okay. It's also amazing. I grew up only speaking Korean until the age of 4. And then after immigrating to the United States, I picked up English like it was nothing. The two stories we read this morning are a reflection on this power of language. And that was at one point taken away and given back. The Tower of Babel, and the pronunciation, I'm going to flip-flop between this 100%. The Tower of Babel is a story often shown as God punishing ambitious humans daring to reach the heights of heaven. And meanwhile, Acts 2 is often seen as the beginning of the church, the beginning of the story of the Christian church, where the Holy Spirit came down upon the Christians and blessed them with this power. And to a certain degree, I see these stories as the beginning and the end of the Bible. Genesis 11 is situated right before Genesis 12, where we are introduced to Abraham. Acts 2 is situated right after Jesus' ascension and before the work of the church begins. So in between these two stories, Genesis 11 and Acts 2, is where the most of the Bible is located. And in fact, the writer of Acts 2 seems almost too cognizant of the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel is one of my personal favorite stories in the Old Testament. It talks about a group of people traveling from the east and deciding to reside in the plains of Shinar, the southern lands of Mesopotamia. Finding the plains a good place to settle, the people then begin to grow in numbers and eventually decide to build a city. They also decide to build a large tower, which will show the world where to go. Settle here. It will prevent people from getting lost. An often forgotten fact is that most of these people must have been refugees. They were looking for a new home and to build a large tower to signify where to come, to find hope, to find home, to find water and shelter. On the face of it, sounds like a good idea. In fact, let's imagine ourselves, Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship. We're a bunch of refugees going east to Saskatchewan. You know where this is going. We get there first, and we want our friends and family from Vancouver to find us. So what do? We build a large tower. And in fact, if we build a large tower in Saskatchewan, you can see it from 50 miles away. But isn't this a good idea? To grow and to prosper and to make sure we're safe? But the story then continues on a curious take when God visits this city. He's quite marveled by it too. He says, quote, "This is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them." God recognizes this human ingenuity and ability to complete anything and prevents them from completing anything. "Come," he says, "let us go down and confuse their language there so that they will not understand one another's speech." Now, I'm going to take you on a quick funny, well, hopefully it's funny, tangent. If I were to create a tier list or a severity list of God's punishments in the Old Testament, this wouldn't even crack the top 20. I don't think a God that condoned massive floods, genocide, leveling of whole cities, killing of firstborns, the disbursement of humanity because they can't understand each other, that's a pretty low-level punishment, at least according to the Old Testament standards. But going back, what did God find so offensive that he decided, hey, let's disperse these humans? I mean, on the face of it, like I said, the values of a unifying tower to keep people safe and together sounds good. But there are clear two faults mentioned in the passage we read today. The first is the intent to reach the heavens. It says, come, let us build ourselves a tower to reach the heavens. And I think that's the first transgression. And the second clear transgression was the need to be unified or the fear to spread across the earth. And these two, I think, are the pillars that define this story as to why they were dispersed. The problem of pride and the problem of unity. Before I go further into the Acts 2 part, I also must preface that Acts 2, the writer of Acts 2, the story of Babel. It must have been. The references of dividing fire, the rush of wind, and other Old Testament references makes it clear that Luke, the attributed writer, knew what he was doing. However, the first transgression is also referenced in Luke and Acts 2 again. In contrast to the Pentecost story, let's review what the word heaven has to do in Genesis. Heavens, in Genesis story, people reached for the heavens. In the Acts 2 story, heavens came down upon them. It's almost looking like the writer was completely referencing the first story. But also, the Holy Spirit and the heavens coming down to the early church during Pentecost might have also a literal meaning to it. Here's what I mean. It's easy to assume how the Tower of Babel was probably built through slavery and oppression. This is the only deducible method where ancient people could build such architectural structures. Things like the Pyramid of Giza, the Great Wall of China, the ziggurats, or many other ancient buildings that are standing today were built by massive forces of slavery and oppression. But here's the irony. If the Tower of Babel was supposed to be a center of hope and unity for a bunch of refugees to come together, wasn't it ironic that they were then enslaved to work on this tower to build such a figure? Meanwhile, the early church sought something entirely different. The Holy Spirit blessed them as they began their work on this current earth, serving the people today. As the church prayed and started the work on this earth, the heavens came down upon them. The fault in the Tower of Babel was the want to create such a tower by sacrificing those that worked and toiled on this earth. And that's the difference of seeking heaven versus heaven coming down upon them. The second transgression is in relation to this idea of pride. And it was the fear of spreading themselves across the earth. Now, I heard a funny sermon by a pastor on YouTube where he humored the idea that this wasn't a punishment at all. In fact, God dispersing humanity across all the earth in different languages and different cultures is just proof that he wanted a multicultural and a multi-ethnic church. Now, while I do love this interpretation, the focus of today's reflection is on both Genesis 11 and Acts 2. And if we look at Acts 2, it's really kind of clear it brings up the Tower of Babel story in a way. And the highlight of the story, the climax of Acts 2, is when people start understanding each other in this various different backgrounds and cultures. You see, in Genesis, God dispersed humanity across the earth as a punishment for their first fault mentioned earlier. Yet here, the gift and the ability to communicate, collaborate, and create is given back to humans. If we're going to subscribe to the idea that the disbursements of humanity across the face of the earth with different cultures, languages, and values was a punishment, then Acts 2 proves that the difference can be reconciled. I'm careful here to say that unity in and of itself is an offense. I said pride and unity. Rather, I think the purpose and the way that unity is sought after was the problem. The problem of unity. How do we reconcile this problem of unity? Because unity on the face of it is a good idea. And I keep coming back to this phrase in verse 6 of the story. It goes, This is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose will now be impossible. When people speak one language, one mind, one value, nothing becomes impossible. When the intentions are to reach the heavens through the sacrifice of several others, and without no other means in sight, it becomes a scary proposal. If a group of nations could do anything, if a company could do anything, if a church could do anything. In fact, we've seen this scary ability in play several times in history. It wasn't even 100 years ago the Holocaust targeted a group of people living in Europe based on their religion and ethnic background. Yet this tragedy would not have been possible without this ability to communicate, collaborate, and create. Even before World War II Germany, we have the Empire of Britain, the Empire of Japan, the Empire of Rome, the Kingdom of Israel, all guilty of similar sins, of acts of violence and oppression. And I guarantee you, in each of these instances, so they will each reference pride and unity as a very core value. But this is a history of humans. What about the history of the church? What about the so-called followers of Christ? Is our history free of pride and unity? Stuart Murray once famously called it the post-Christendom world. I want to say this is also a post-Babel world. The church built this tower and they reached for the heavens. The Christians built this tower and we reached for the heavens. And now God has dispersed us. The church is slowly dispersing itself across the face of the earth. The church made a name for itself and made itself known around the world, even influencing it. We, in the name of Christianity, stamped out cultures, oppressed individuals, violently imposed our regime over others in the name of pride and unity. Pride and unity are a very part of the Christian culture. And I believe that's the crux of this warning of Genesis 11, but also the message of hope of Acts 2. The builders of Babel strive towards heaven in vain by stomping on top of the people that came to them as refugees. They created a large structure that served a fake enterprise and nothing real. Language is a powerful tool, I said. It allows us to conceptualize and make things that aren't real, real. It makes the impossible possible. It's such a powerful tool that even God acknowledges as the reason humans can create miracles. But from the Tower of Babel alone, the story ends as a bleak warning. But Acts 2 sends a message of hope, as I said. If we are to strive as the early Christians did, not only would we be unified, but heaven will come down on us and we can achieve the impossible. We must look towards what the early Christians and Jesus taught and see how we can use this power to communicate, collaborate, and create. What we do with this potentially destructive power is up to us as we reflect upon these two stories. Thank you.